For the last few weeks of our live presentation, we've been talking about intention. As a matter of fact, we've done some remarkable experiments, and you have been emailing in your experiences, the changes, the feelings that you get in setting your intentions and trying to make a difference. And you've asked that we could push this a little further. Now, we weren't on last week, and we have shuffled Cameron to next week. He'll be on with me live Tuesday night, so I want to make sure everybody's aware of that. But tonight, we're going to take a look at the power of intention. And we're going to go beyond the woo of the supernatural, the paranormal that we talk about on this normal program. We're going to discuss the power of intention tonight with a Stanford School of Medicine professor, author, and mindfulness expert, Dr. Greg Hammer, to explain setting positive intentions and how that may go as far as to even help relieve chronic diseases, heal emotional wounds, and facilitate success. We're on a track for a new paradigm, a new life. This is something that we've all been looking to, something that we all want. How do we get that key to start that motor? That's what we're going to discuss tonight. Unleashing intention. Our guest this evening is Dr. Greg Hammer. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, sir.
Great to be with you, Dave.
Obviously, you've set your intention from the beginning of the show. You need in and out in 1 hour. Your family's waiting for dinner, so we'll respect that and buzz through this. Intention for the show, of course, because we deal with the supernatural, the paranormal, and other strange phenomena. We talk about the setting of intentions, of going in, putting forth what our expectations are, what we want, what we hope to get back out of an experience. And I've talked about my own personal experiences doing this over the last 15, 16 years of the show. A lot of people in the metaphysical world discuss the term intention, but I don't know that there's one kind of defining description or definition for this. In dealing with this and with the book that you've written, Gain Without Pain, the Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals, you talk about intention and what it means. Could you please give us your definition of the word and the action of intention?
Sure. Well, you know, the title of my book involves the acronym GAIN, which stands for gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. So I think for me, the definition of intention, if you will, is to be seen in the context of these other three pillars of personal resilience, happiness, and peace. And so it's really just a component. And I think the four components of GAIN represent really the four pillars of that support our well-being, and they're kind of interwoven. So I think when we talk about intention, at least from my point of view, in the way I've discussed intention, it's really in the context of the entire background of GAIN. So intention to me, and I know there are different definitions, there's a sort of a yogic manifestation of intention. That some people view intention in the context of a force in the universe. But in the way that I discuss intention, it's really an individual purposefulness. And I really like the way that one of my heroes, Jon Kabat-Zinn, defined mindfulness as being aware of the present moment on purpose, non-judgmentally. And the on purpose represents our intention. And as we manifest our intention, we actually change our brain physiology. In other words, we have several qualities that appear to be hardwired into our brains that don't necessarily serve us well, unfortunately. And the good news is that we can, through our guiding of our own thought processes, through our own intention, we can actually rewire our brains. And the scientific term for this is neuroplasticity. That means that our brains remain malleable, and all the little connections between nerve cells called synapses and the neural pathways themselves that fire under various circumstances are changeable, they're modifiable. And we're really at the helm of the forces that can modify those neural pathways and synapses. So that's the underlying basis for neuroplasticity. And, you know, to me, it's a really exciting area. It's not my primary area of research. My primary research has to do with drugs and drug metabolism and drug effects and concentration of drugs in various body compartments and so on, especially those drugs that provide pain relief or sedation or unconsciousness. The term for that, a medically induced state of unconsciousness, is actually called hypnosis. Again, a word with many definitions. But I think this is really exciting because we are endowed with a couple of qualities that interfere with our happiness. And these include, one, a negativity bias. We tend to remember the negative things and forget the positive things. And there are just, you know, so many examples of that in our everyday life. And the second set of qualities with which we're bestowed is an obsession with the past and the future. So we can talk about this in more detail if you'd like, but the bottom line is that there are adaptive and maladaptive ways to think of the past and the future. And we tend to overthink the past and the future, and overthinking of the past results in shame and regret and embarrassment. And overthinking of the future, again, we're all prone to do these things. This is not something that is unique to any individual. Overthinking of the future leads to fear and anxiety. And of course, there's been an abundance of that in the past year and a half related to COVID, on top of our already stressful, uncertain, and to some sort of fear-invoking set of circumstances.
It's interesting that you bring up the fact that we focus on the negative, the things that are going wrong, instead of being present in the moment, being reminded of the things that have gone well. And we look at how destructive that can be. And then there's kind of the opposite side. How many times have we taken a step back and forgotten the bad aspects of work or relationships, friendships, and we overlook that and then reincorporate that into our lives only to have it drag us back down again? We do play this strange yin and yang cyclical nature of our personality, and both sides are equally destructive.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I tell the story in the book, and I think it's poignant. My book really was originally geared toward healthcare professionals, but it was written really in response to the rising tide of burnout in healthcare providers. Being a wellness enthusiast, both physical and spiritual, I had some sabbatical time and thought it would be a perfect thing to write about since I had been speaking about it more and more. The purpose of writing the book was really to give people tools, at least from my perspective, that help them deal with chronic stress that leads to burnout. And, one of those elements is this negativity bias. I tell a story in the book about my working with a resident in anesthesiology one day, and we have four very difficult cases involving chest surgery. And the resident and I discuss all the cases the night before. We're ready to go. So we start the first case, and she just does a brilliant job. She manages all aspects of caring for the patient flawlessly. She puts in various catheters in the artery and in a vein and going into the heart, and an epidural catheter in the back to provide pain relief during and after surgery, and everything goes beautifully. She takes the breathing tube out at the end of the procedure. The patient's in the recovery room feeling no pain, and it's beautiful. The second patient, pretty much the same thing, but the resident couldn't get a catheter in the artery in the wrist that we intended to place to monitor the patient and have access to draw blood for laboratory analysis. Everything else was perfect. She put in an epidural catheter. Really was a flawless anesthetic. And the third and the fourth cases were just like the first one. Really flawless. So she goes home at the end of the day. We debrief. I tell her what a great job she did. Really, she had no areas of concern. So it was all positive feedback. She goes home and she has dinner with her husband, and then she's preparing to go to sleep at night and taking stock of the day as she turns down the bed linens And does she think about all the 99% of the things that happened that day that went well? No, she thinks and fixates on missing that little radial arterial catheter placement that Dr. Hammer had to come in and put in. And that's just so typical, you know. First of all, she's a trainee, and even at my stage, we do occasionally, you know, miss on a procedure. And but the fact is that she was great, and everything she did was almost perfect. And yet, she still went home and agonized over that one tiny thing that she felt she could do better. And I think that sort of exemplifies this negativity bias that we have. And again, the good news is, through intention, we can actually rewire our brains so we convert that negativity bias into more of a positivity bias.
I love that you're saying this. It reminds me of our discussion that we had a few weeks ago and talking about the fact that we have that niggling in the back of our brain, that negative chatter. And I walk people through an experiment where I had them deep breathe, close their eyes, just kind of focus on a point, something that bothers them, whether it's a moment in their life they felt hurt or abandoned or lost or something that was bothering them, and just kind of giving love to that moment, giving love to themselves in that moment to start to forgive. And I've actually gotten some really beautiful emails from people around the world that watched it and played along at home. And they said that it did feel refreshing. It was a different way. And it, you know, it's kind of breaking the paradigm of negativity, but feeding that it's okay. You're human. These things happen, mistakes made. I love you. We're going to get through this kind of thing, and reinforcing with positivity as opposed to how could I have missed it? Then I had to call in Dr. Hammer, and God, I'm sure I look like an idiot, right? And you've got all of that constant negative chatter just chewing away at who you are. And words really do have an unbelievable power over our physiology, don't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, the good news is that we do have, as we've been discussing, we do have the power of intention, and we can kind of reframe the way we think, rewire our brains. And a great example of that, Dave, is a program that's been ongoing at Duke University for several years called Three Good Things. And basically, they've enrolled tens of thousands of individuals who, through the internet, sign up, and the individuals pledge to think about, review, and embrace, and write down, if possible, three good things that happened to them during the day. So, for example, tonight I will think of, I just got a new puppy, and my wonderful significant other and her daughter, we're all living together, and we played with the puppy for a while before Lily went to school, and it was just wonderful. And then I had quite a productive day, and I can reflect favorably on that. I had a great workout in my gym at home. And now, Dave, you and I are having this great conversation together. So tonight, for sure, I'll be thinking of these things as I prepare to go to sleep. So what the Duke investigators have found, in tens of thousands of people, and they take serial wellness surveys that have been well-validated, what they found is by practicing three good things, again, this is a practice that takes no time at all. You can just conceptually conceive of three things that went well during the day. People become happier and their sleep improves and it's sustainable. And, you know, it's just the magic and the power of that little bit of intention, but done frequently and regularly, has an amazing transformative effect on the way we think.
I like that, you know, as you were talking in the beginning, as well as we're talking about how we work, we're stuck in the past, we're worried about the future. The present is intention, right? Goal setting is waiting for the future to happen or for us to get ourselves to the future by setting the intention, which is the negative chatter you're dealing with right now, the man, God, I look horrible in this outfit. I'm so fat. I'm disgusting. That's right now. That's the intention you're setting right now, which starts to map that neural pathway, doesn't it? And starts to breed contempt, resentment, anger, anxiety, frustration. And in setting goals as opposed to setting intention, we have to be just as vigilant about what we're doing in this exact moment as we are with what comes next.
Exactly. Well, you know, I tell another story in the book, which is explaining the difference between intention and goals. As you've made very clear, intention is something that is happening in real time. You know, the only experience that we ever truly have is this moment. The past and the future really are just a series of thoughts that come and go. The only time that we really truly experience is this moment. And that's where happiness lives. If you think of all the times that we've been happiest, it's when we're, say, walking through a forest of tall trees and the sunlight is sort of filtering through the leafy canopy 100 feet above us. And we're just thinking of the timelessness of these trees and the fresh air and the sort of smell of pine. And, you know, maybe we're in the mountains and we're not thinking about what happened yesterday or what's going to happen tomorrow during those moments. So if we can be present more of the time and really rewire our brains away from this obsession with the past and the future, we will be happier people. And, you know, I think that's a very powerful analysis that, presence is happiness. And there's no question about that. And back to intention versus goals. So I tell a story in the book of I'm going to, it's a Saturday afternoon, it's a beautiful day. I'm going to take my bike off the wall in my garage and I'm going to ride up into the hills west of Palo Alto and do some climbing and get to this ridge where I'll be able to see the Pacific Ocean. And, you know, that's my goal, is to really make it up there and have that vista. So my intention, on the other hand, is enjoying every moment of the ride, every cycle of the pedals, you know, feeling the pressure of my foot against the pedal and feeling my muscles contract sequentially as I drive the bike up this hill and enjoying the scenery every moment. And that's my intention, is to just have a fantastic bike ride. And so I eventually get to the top. And meanwhile, the fog has rolled in, and forget about seeing the Pacific Ocean. You can barely see 100 feet ahead. And welcome to life in the, you know, north central coast of California. And so I didn't achieve my goal of getting up to the top and seeing the Pacific Ocean, but I enjoyed my intention each moment of the trip. And it was wonderful. And so I feel happy and present and excited, and it's been a wonderful day. So even though I didn't attain my goal, and this can be applied in all aspects of life, you know, well, I want to be president of the company, blah, blah, blah. And as you said, that's a future state, that's a future occurrence. So let's just go back to emphasizing our intention of doing our job the best we can, being the most kind and generous person that we can, being the most loving person that we can. And good things will generally happen. But and I think it's okay to have goals, but it's also important just to recognize putting them in place, if you will.
Setting the goal is one aspect of it, but it's the daily intention of seeing your way through it. I love this aspect because I've done sales most of my life. And I look at, kind of reflectively back now, at how many times what I did in sales was about setting intentions for the buyer, which made me successful. You know, when I sold general merchandise to grocery stores and drug stores, I didn't just say, oh, yeah, I've got some brand new nightlights, this, that, and the other. I told them, I've got these great nightlights. They're the Teletubbies, which are really popular right now on TV. My kids love them. You know, I think if you take these clips, strip them up right in the cereal aisle by whatever your most popular sugar cereal is, they're going to see these. It's going to fly out of your store. I took them out of, well, I wonder if this is going to sell, into right now seeing for themselves. Yeah. If I hang them there, that's going to be the place to sell them. And setting that intention, not for myself, but for the client, and how much success I would hear back from the clients on that. And I don't know, maybe I'm misreading it or trying to reinterpret it, but isn't that in essence the same thing, is not worrying about what could happen, what's happened in the past, but what can I do to make right now the most successful moment I can?
Yes, and there are many, many ways we can do that. And in all walks of life and in all aspects of life, whether it's work, whether it's home, you know, using our intention is of the utmost importance. So as part of my wellness teaching, I emphasize this gain meditation. And essentially, that starts with our intention the evening before. So, you know, I talk to my trainees and residents and fellows, and I ask them what makes them feel well, what makes them feel happy, what kind of releases the stress for them. And they say, well, I love to go to yoga class, or I like to go for a long bike ride, but I don't have time to do these things very often as a resident. So I'm basically not doing them. And I said, well, you know, how about if we introduce a method of bringing you peace and letting go of stress that takes 3 minutes? And that's the morning gain meditation. So set your alarm, set your intention the night before by setting your alarm 3 minutes earlier than you would otherwise. If you're going to normally get up at 5:45 in the morning, and yes, they do get up early, set your alarm for 5:42 instead of 5:45. You're not going to miss the 3 minutes. Or if you are, go to bed 3 minutes earlier. Get up, open the blinds, or do whatever you do. Do your morning hygiene, and then find a comfortable place to sit. And sit quietly and close your eyes, sit up, sit in any position that's comfortable for you, and focus on your breath and slow down the inhalation through your nose, maybe to a count of three, and hold, let that pause, that breath pause for a count of three, and then let it out without effort to a count of four. And just do this cyclic technique of focusing on the breath for a couple of breaths, and then transition to a contemplation of that for which we're grateful. And we all have a lot for which to be grateful. We can talk about gratitude all night. You know, it's certainly central to happiness. You can be disabled and happy. You can be physically disabled. You can be poor and happy. But you'll never see a person who's ungrateful and happy. So gratitude is obviously linked to happiness. And, you know, so I think I have a lot for which to be grateful. I was diagnosed with a cancer some years ago and thought I might not be alive at this point in my life. And I take a immunotherapy pill every morning and I'm perfectly okay. There's no evidence of cancer in my body. I mean, that is just miraculous. So that's often something that's high on my list of gratitude. So I may start with that. And I feel gratitude for the work that I'm privileged to do, and feel grateful for being able to exercise and stay in good health and to help other people, and for the loving friends and family that I have. And no matter, you know, everybody's got something. So you can decide to focus on negative again, or you can be grateful for all the positive things. And then we transition to acceptance, because life is full of pain and suffering. I mean, just look around the world. Look right. What's happening in Haiti, for example, with this earthquake. And then I was listening to public radio the other day after the earthquake, and it was a tropical storm. So first their president gets assassinated, and then they have this horrendous earthquake, and then they have this tropical storm. And so all these people whose homes were destroyed are sleeping outside in the pounding rain. I mean, it just sounded immediately just heart-wrenching and miserable. And, you know, of course, what's happening in Afghanistan, and there's always war and hunger and disease, of course, the pandemic. So I think that life is full of pain and suffering. Pain and suffering are an intrinsic part of life, as are joy and happiness. So rather than try not to think about this, my approach is to embrace it. And actually, during the next part of our gain meditation, we transition from gratitude to actually conceptualizing something that's representative of pain and suffering, and then visualize actually our chest opening and our heart opening wide, and bring this element of pain closer and closer until we merge with it, till there's no separation, till we can answer the question, can I live with this pain forever, in the affirmative. And when we do that and we kind of cycle our attention to our breathing as well, you find that this is something I can live with, and it's not as bad as what I had conceived of as I tried to resist it. And there's a formula in the book, which is suffering equals pain times resistance. You know, in medicine, you love formulas. So you have this pain, and the more you resist it, the greater your suffering. On the other hand, if you just open your heart to it and fully embrace and accept it, acceptance being the opposite of resistance in this sense, your resistance goes towards zero and the suffering goes towards zero. The pain is still there, but it doesn't induce the same level of misery. And so then we transition from acceptance to intention. And again, I bring up the three good things. So this may be three good things that happened the day before, since it's first thing in the morning now. And we, again, make a commitment to bringing our thought process back to the present moment, since it's the only moment that we truly experience. And, you know, we dwell on the intention for 30 or 45 seconds, focus on the breath again, and then transition to non-judgment. And non-judgment is really essential because our minds are always comparing things in our environment. And again, our negativity bias comes into play, and we tend to compare ourselves to others unfavorably in a negative way. And so, oh, that person is taller than I am. That person is better looking than I am. I'm not as smart as that person. And in fact, we can bring our attention to non-judgment, where we drop these judgments. And in this part of my morning game meditation, I actually envision the earth as in one of the NASA images, where the earth is just suspended in the middle of my mind's eye. And the earth is neither good nor bad. There's no application of this judgment of favorable or unfavorable. The earth is neither good nor bad. We didn't create it the way it is. It simply is as it is. And then when we're getting a little bit more adept at non-judgment, we can actually look to ourselves and drop the judgment of ourselves, because that's, again, where we're our own harshest critic. And so if we can think of ourselves as neither good nor bad, we're really winning. And then we return to the breath and we focus on the breath a few more times and then slowly open our eyes. And this really doesn't take very long. And we can then kind of set our intention for focusing on one or more of these gain elements during the day. So for example, if I'm going to drive to work, which I rarely do since I normally bike very close by, but let's say I am going to drive, I'm going to set my intention on dropping the judgment of the first person who changes into my lane without using their turn signal. And you know that we immediately start to judge that person. That, you know, they're a bad driver, they're inconsiderate, and probably some more expletives. And as I find myself starting to make those judgments, I'm making the intentional commitment to dropping those judgments. And actually, you know, this is something that there's humor in it, right? I mean, you realize you're making this judgment of the other person. You don't know that person. I'm sure we've all done just what that other person did. That doesn't make us good or bad. So just let the judgment fall away. And what happens, Dave, is you get a little dopamine hit in the brain. We get a little bit of that magic neurotransmitter release, and we actually have a pleasant sensation. So we get a little chuckle out of it. We feel a little bit, actually feel good. So we've converted a negative experience into a positive experience simply by using our intention to practice non-judgment.
That speaks to my heart in so many ways. One thing I've done, and I learned this many years ago, I wish I could remember who imparted me with this wisdom, but how many times have we been out somewhere and we've got cash in our pocket and we're doing stuff and moving our phones in and out, and then the money's gone? Where did I? No, right? It's real easy to go into panic, anger, overload. I've always just stopped now, and I'm like, that's good. That's good, because that money's going to end up in the hands of somebody that needs it more than I do right now. And I feel better about that. I mean, it might not. Maybe it'll end up in the hands of somebody doing something stupid with it, but I'm repurposing that thought and taking myself from a place where I'm going to be spoiled all day because of one bad moment. Well, Dave, I know I've got, I'm sure I've got listeners like, oh yeah, so if you lose $400, hey man, if you have $400 in your pocket and you're not taking better care of it, at least be thankful this is going to be found by somebody who's probably going to need $400 as much as you did. So I just try to placate myself. You talk about fighting the negativity and how that can be even more damaging. I liken that to the scene in Forrest Gump, right? You've got Lieutenant Dan, lost his legs, really has lost his way, and he goes, and there's Forrest. Well, you can join me, Lieutenant Dan. We'll be shrimp boat captains. And they're out there, and then the worst storm, he's finally getting his life on track. The worst storm comes, and Sinise, Lieutenant Dan, is shaking his fist to God, and he's like, bring it on. He's no longer fighting the storm. He's saying, I'll take it. I'll accept it. And then once it's over, his life changed. And I thought that was such a great transformative issue to watch evolve. Now, again, it's a movie, but that's the concept that I play in my head when I try to think of my own dealing with depression and anxiety, is I can stand here, try to be stoic and, you know, take the hits, or I can kind of yield and let the storm wash over me. And at the end of it, no, I'm going to be refreshed. I'm going to be clean. I'm going to towel off, and tomorrow's another day. And that's what keeps me moving forward, by being in that moment and kind of accepting that that aspect of what it is that I'm dealing with right now.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Dave. I mean, you know, we are in charge of our thoughts. So it's all about intention. Realize that you dropped your money. It's gone. So you have a choice now. You can dwell on that past moment, you know, that past occurrence, and kick yourself for the rest of the day and just beat yourself up for having lost your money that you worked hard for and so on. Or you can think to yourself, gee, you know, that's probably not going to change my lifestyle. It's probably going to have no impact on my life other than what I create in a negative way. And I think this is like just a tiny peek at what I consider to be a time to go with the deathbed perspective. So at the end of my life, am I going to look back and regret in a way that I wasted time dwelling on the negative, catastrophizing, thinking of the past continuously and all the mistakes that I had made and beating myself up for it, or thinking of the future and always, you know, focusing on the worst possible event or outcome, even though those will almost certainly not transpire? I had a choice. Why did I waste all that time thinking of these negative thoughts of the past and maladaptive thoughts of the future? I don't want that to happen. I don't want to have any regrets at the end of my life. I want to feel that I lived life to its fullest and I was present every moment to the extent possible. So when you think about the fact that that money came out of your pocket, you know, initially you're going to just kick yourself, but then you can realize, hey, I've got a choice here. I've got intention. I've got neuroplasticity. Do I want to really dwell on this in a negative way, or do I want to have a laugh, recognize that, yeah, some poor homeless person might have found the money, and by the way, it's not going to change the way I live my life, and then be grateful for the wealth that you have, that you could actually afford to lose that $400 and it's not going to bankrupt you. So there are a lot of positive angles on that little event, as well as the negative ones. And through your intention, you can choose which path, which neural path, and which synapses to fire you want to undertake.
We're going to take a quick break. Before we do, listen, I know my listeners because I know myself. And there are many of you saying, yeah, that's all nice in theory, but it's not that easy. You can't just think it happy. And you're right, you cannot. Because that's what your mindset is going into this. Because right now you polluted your neural pathways with so much shit and debris from all of the negativity you've allowed everybody else to feed to you, that at this point, you're right, you won't. But we're giving you the tools tonight. Dr. Hammer's laying out a line for you to follow so that you can take that, sweep the debris, and start to clear those pathways to redirect how you look at it. So you're right. Right now, you can't do it, but tomorrow you can. And you can start by tonight thinking of those three things that you're grateful for today, no matter how small they were. Maybe that moment in the grocery line when somebody said, "Man, I love your eyes. They're so pretty." That one little thing, that smile from the valet that handed you your keys. There's always three things that you can find. Start focusing on that and replacing and pushing the debris out and accepting those moments, and you will see a difference. So what is the old saying, Dr. Hammer? Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're always right, because you're setting that intention in yourself to have that experience.
Yes, beautiful.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more with Dr. Greg Hammer. This is Darkness Radio Presents Unleashing Intention. Welcome back to the program. This is the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Our guest tonight, Dr. Greg Hammer. Dr. Hammer, I have to make a quick mention. We didn't address this earlier this week in our supernatural news, but the news is officially out. And I think this is pertinent to our conversation tonight. For all of you that have supported us with the Holzer Files TV program on Travel Channel, I want to thank you all for watching, the love, the support, the affection that you've shown, the team, Alexandra, Gabe, Cindy, Shane, and myself. We've had a wonderful time. At this point, they have elected not to continue the program. It's gone. We have to let that go. It would be very easy to wallow in the pain of that and wallow in the loss of our favorite show or the job that we love to do. But when you allow yourself to be buoyant instead of sinking with that feeling and allow yourself to have that moment, new opportunities do arise. And I can't go into details much, but I can tell you this. Although the Holzer Files is over, you haven't seen the end of any one of us on the TV program. As a matter of fact, a few of us have got new things happening right now. So stay positive, stay focused, don't give up your Discovery Plus subscriptions, don't stop watching Travel Channel, that's what will kill your favorite shows. Just keep watching, supporting, and being a part of it. Speaking of, September 10th is the date, folks, the curse of Lizzie Borden. Chris Fleming, myself, Sam Beltrusis, Luann Jolly, we visit the Lizzie Borden home, the site of the notorious murders, and uncover some really interesting, chilling, and disturbing facts. That's coming up September 10th on Discovery Plus and Discovery Plus UK, so make sure you tune in and check that out. And there are more programs coming, folks, so stay up. You know, Dr. Hammer, again, I know how important, especially being in sales and in radio, how important the word is in painting a picture in the mind's eye. And I want people to think of something. Right now, I want you to imagine the Titanic as it's making its way through the ocean. What sunk that Titanic? Was it striking the iceberg? No, it was the gash that was made from striking the iceberg. It was the water that then permeated the hull of the ship and dragged it down. That's how words and actions affect us. Just because you have something destructive or disruptive happen to you today does not mean it's going to pull you down. It's what you allow in through that chasm. And if you continually push forward, bail, and realize, I'm going to get through this, that's what's going to keep you buoyant. It's the moment you give up and you allow the negativity to seep in. That's what sinks the Titanic. That's what takes down your life. That's living in the moment of intention, in seeing the best outcome for yourself in the worst moments. And as hard as it is, you'll find it refreshing. Dr. Hammer, you mentioned that you start to awaken this dopamine feel in the brain when you, instead of grasping and swallowing the bitter pill of dejection and defeat, but instead realize another opportunity lies just ahead. If I keep moving and you find that positivity, it feeds a new beast.
Yeah. And I wonder, Dave, how many of us have had a near-death experience? How many of us have perhaps almost stepped right in front of a bus because we weren't paying attention and felt the draft inches away from our nose, as I have actually had that experience when I was a teenager. You know, how many of us have had a life-threatening illness? And we're still here. I assume that all the people listening to you, now again, I'm not familiar with all of the darkness that you all normally discuss, but so maybe some of those people who succumb to those actually death experiences are listening, but I assume that most of your listeners are actually still alive and with us, and, you know, we survived it. And so no matter how bad things are, they could certainly be worse. So, you know, my left knee is hurting. Well, the good news is my right knee is fine. And I'm not talking about what might be termed a spiritual bypass. I'm not talking about you can just think life is great, so it is, or you can just think that it's all happiness and it is all of a sudden like a bowl of cherries. No, not at all. That's why the A in game is there. The A is there to actually contemplate that which is painful and dwell on it and spend, you know, give that equal time. But then move on to your intention and decisions that you make about your own thought processes and the way you lead your life in this moment. And so, yes, I mean, I think that, again, no matter how bad things are, they could be worse, and we should go back to gratitude. That's why I say these four elements are so interwoven. You can't really talk about intention without also talking about gratitude, acceptance, and non-judgment, because they're all really woven together as really inexorable elements of the way our minds work and as a source of well-being.
You bring up how many of us have had a near-death experience. Right. Here's something. And Dr. Hammer, I don't know if this has happened for you, but I've mentioned this on the show in the past and it resonates with me often. Do you know the times that have seemed the slowest to me are when I'm in the moment watching as the car is about to hit me? Right. When I'm driving down the road with my 10-year-old son in the car and we hit a patch of ice in Minnesota and start to spin on a busy highway. And in what probably was a matter of 3 seconds, I carried on a detailed conversation with my son. I turned to him. I said, "I'm really sorry, buddy. This is going to hurt." And he said, "It's not your fault, Dad." And I said, "I know, but I feel bad. I should have been paying better attention." And we had this whole conversation while the car is doing a movie spin. And Dr. Hammer, cars are going around us on a slippery road without striking us. Then we come down and go into the gully in between, and I think, whew, all right, we made it out. But the car guns and starts to launch up into oncoming traffic. And I looked at him, and I said, "Well, brace yourself, son." And he's like, "Okay, Dad, I love you." And I said, "I love you too." And the car stopped. And I don't think we've had that long a conversation since, right? In that moment, we weren't worried about what we were going to do this weekend. We weren't worried about what happened at work. We were worried about right now, and that we could become masters of time if we start living in the spaces in between all the shit that goes wrong in our life, and we stop putting it in front of us to beat ourselves up and looking back at it and letting it weigh us down. But being right here can walk us through this moment and enjoy it. And I think I don't know what that phenomena is, but man, time was not in control at that moment. Our lives were, and we enjoyed every last second of that moment that we had together. And we still talk about it today. And my son's, you know, 33 and a father of four. And it's a powerful moment for both of us to still talk about.
That's a beautiful story. I think that you nailed it. You described the experience of being aware of the present moment without judgment. And that is where happiness lives. And so you and your son shared that magical experience. And that experience is available to us all the time.
Especially if you live in Minnesota driving with me, we could spin through the roads every day.
Actually, I had that not exactly the same experience. And I was alone in my first car, which was a Honda Civic. rolled off the production line. It was $3,000. This was back in, I don't know, the mid-70s, I guess.
Okay.
And I went to university at the, I went to Northwestern, and then because of my academic interests, I actually transferred to the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And I was driving home to Chicago on I-94 in those conditions, and probably shouldn't have been driving, especially with a Honda Civic. So, I mean, it's just a tiny little tin can, let's face it. But I ended up doing 360s. You know, people were going really slow. But I remember that experience of doing 360s and watching some cars go by me. And again, you know, people say that when they have a near-death experience, and I'm not saying this was equivalent, but people who have maybe a myocardial infarction or heart attack, and their heart stops, and they're experiencing imminent death, and then, you know, something happens that somebody resuscitates them, and they live to tell the story. In that moment, or in those moments, people are liberated. You know, the descriptions, I have a book by a Danish cardiologist who wrote about near-death experiences, and the stories have one thing in common, and that is that the people were in the present moment, and they were liberated. You know, they were set free. And I think they saw the disappearance of this thing we call time and the thing we call space, and they were just in pure awareness. And I think there's a indescribable beauty in that. And again, I'm not saying that we can live every moment of our lives. You know, we get up in the morning, we have to make a decision which leg we're going to put in the, you know, pant first. So it's not as though every moment is potentially like that. But the fact is that we have this present moment experience available to us at all times. And, you know, the way we learn, as an educator, I can feel confident in saying the way we learn is in small increments. So we can talk about baby steps. Take baby steps, little bit at a time, but we learn in small increments through repetition. So that's why I promote this gain meditation, which can be done in as little as 3 minutes, but it should be a daily practice. And the thing is that you get better and better and better at using your intention to guide you into gratitude, into acceptance, into non-judgment. And if you just take those baby steps every day, after 4, 5, or 6 months, you'll look back and you'll think, wow, I'm just like the participants in the Three Good Things study. I've really become happier. I sleep better. I'm friendlier to people. I don't get upset as easily. I'm more patient. I'm a better partner. You know, it's remarkable. So there's no such thing as doing it wrong. There's no such thing as failure. As long as you're taking baby steps and you're pointing yourself in the right direction through your intention, you're going to have a better quality of life. And that's really all we can ask for.
Our minds and our bodies are deeply connected. All that goes on up here can affect everything, and we forget that sometimes. Now, could you tell me, in being in the moment, setting intentions, do you believe we can reverse the ill effects of disease and aging? Not necessarily like we're, you know, found the fountain of youth, but can we, at a molecular or cellular level, start to change who we are?
Yes, we can. And there's some really great evidence of that. Looking at brain imaging, I think my favorite example of how we can use our intention to live and begin to think and experience our environment in ways that are positive and let go of chronic stress. One of my favorite examples of objectively seeing that is by looking at little tiny structures that protect our chromosomes called telomeres. And there's been a fair amount written about telomeres. And I liken them to the little plastic caps at the end of our shoelaces that prevent our shoelaces from becoming frayed. So these little telomeres are at the end of our chromosomes, helping to protect them, helping to prevent damage to the chromosomes. Not completely necessarily, but they're protective structures. And as we age, the telomeres at the end of our chromosomes begin to get shorter. And this is something that accompanies aging. And it's wonderful because looking at those telomeres under the microscope provides objective evidence of our ability to, in some ways, reverse aging, as you said. So chronic stress is the source of a number of adverse physiologic conditions. So again, you know, I talk about what's adaptive and what's maladaptive. The considerations of the past are adaptive to the extent that we think of our mistakes and learn from them. Our contemplation of the past is adaptive to the extent that we savor our loving memories. And our contemplations of the future are adaptive to the extent that they help us put bread on the table. We have to do a certain amount of planning. And also that we look forward to wonderful times with friends and family. But beyond that, dwelling on the past and future is maladaptive. And so it's very much the same thing when it comes to stress. Acute stress can be adaptive. So you're at a party, there's a swimming pool, it's a nice summer day, and you hear a splash, and lo and behold, there's a missing toddler. And the toddler that's missing is in the swimming pool. And now I've got this burst of adrenaline or epinephrine in my body, and my serum cortisol goes up, which causes my blood sugar to go up. And this gives me the energy and the presence to jump in the pool and rescue the toddler. So that's an acute stress response that's adaptive. However, when this kind of physiologic change associated with stress, even at a much lower level, persists for days or weeks or months, there are a lot of observable adverse effects. And this includes, for example, adverse effects on our heart and our blood vessels. You know, the chronic elevation in cortisol elevates our blood sugar. It makes us prone to diabetes. It causes our heart rate to go up and puts a stress on our heart. And this adversely affects cardiac function and vascular function as well. There are other hormonal changes associated with chronic stress. Chronic stress certainly interferes with our sleep, as we can all recognize. Insomnia is probably one of the most, if not the most, common maladies that we deal with as humans. And chronic stress definitely has a role in that. And chronic stress causes our telomeres to shorten. And it has been demonstrated that people who take a mindfulness-based stress reduction course, for example, for 8 weeks, and then have a mindfulness practice, and I would consider that to be like my GAIN practice, over time, their telomeres begin to lengthen again. And so this is a sign, it's sort of a biomarker, if you will, of, you want to call it the reversal of the aging process? Sure, because chronic stress causes our telomeres to shorten, and aging is associated with shortening of our telomeres as well. So chronic stress induces a sort of aging-like change in our bodies. And we can reverse that by letting go of the chronic stress. And we do that through intention. And, you know, in my case, I teach gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment as a practice. And then also we have to acknowledge that there are pillars of our physical well-being, as well as the GAIN elements for our emotional and spiritual well-being. The tripod on which our physical well-being rests is composed of sleep, exercise, and nutrition. So we could talk all evening about how to use our intention to improve our sleep hygiene. There's a lot of things we can do with regard to alcohol, caffeine, screen time in bed, etc. We can improve our sleep hygiene if we set our intention to do so. Exercise, even just walking around the block, is better than not getting up and walking around the block. Many people have been sitting too much on their rear ends during COVID, and people talk about the COVID-19 as the 19-pound weight gain. And then nutrition. You know,
I'm an overachiever, Doc. I think I'm at the COVID-38 level at this point.
So anyway, I you know, not to go on for too long, but using our intention to focus on improving our sleep, exercise, and nutrition, as well as a daily ongoing practice to reduce chronic stress in our lives, will be associated with lengthening of our telomeres, normalization of our blood sugar, reduction in our heart rate, improvement in our cardiovascular fitness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this is all related to intention, if you will, Dave. Beautiful in a way.
It is. It's very beautiful. And to know that we have the ability within ourselves to change these things. I think we've all become victims of victimhood, and we carry that victimhood like a shield, almost a badge of honor. And instead of laying it down and allowing ourselves to heal, we keep carrying this burden with us of the things that we've done wrong in the past, the things that we've seen and done, and the things that we fear we're going to have to deal with in the future because of that. But in being now, being in the moment, setting the intentions to clear away the minefields, that will be what will help give us back our own life, our own intention. When we do intention experiments on the show, everything from people saying, Dave, California is dying, we need rain. And we've done strange weather experiments on the show over 15 years where we do an intention experiment on the air. 3 days later, rain shows up that they had no forecast for. You know, we started looking at another element of it. And I think this was the big key element that was missing from The Secret, that book that came out. The Secret was all about manifesting. I want that front row parking spot. I want that spot. Did it? And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But what you need to do is start setting the intention of not just what you want, but seeing yourself there in that moment, in that parking space, in that moment of feeling healthy, skinny, happy, wealthy, loved, and basking in how that feeling makes you feel, because that becomes the narcotic that will feed all of what we are, right? So that we can achieve our intentions and therefore our goals.
Well, I think we all know that positivity breeds positivity and negativity breeds negativity. And the more positive we are with regard to our intention and our daily practice, the way we live our lives, the more positive things we experience. There's no question about that. And the converse is true with negativity. And, you know, by the way, who would we rather spend time with? Somebody who's focusing on the negative all the time, you know, maladaptively discussing and thinking of regret and shame and things that happened in the past, or things that may happen in the future that are negative, and they're worrying and they're fearful. People who are ungrateful, who are not accepting, who are overly judgmental. I mean, who are we drawn toward? And, you know, I can tell you in no uncertain terms that I'm drawn toward the positive, toward those people that are manifesting the positivity in life. Although I have empathy and sympathy for those that are mired in a negativistic way of being, I certainly wouldn't choose to spend time with them unless they needed me for some reason, you know, here and there. But I wouldn't plan on spending an evening with somebody like that. And so I think it's just another little example of the power of being positive and present.
With that said, I set the intention to have a positive evening with an interesting and fascinating speaker that could help shed some light. My intentions and my goals have been met. We are at the 1 hour mark. You have family waiting for you to have dinner. Dr. Greg Hammer, thank you so much for coming on and giving some enlightenment and showing that there is some science behind this. And it's not just willing and woo-woo factor, but we can make the difference in our own lives. And thank you for the work you do to help other people to see that.
Thank you, Dave. It's been great being with you.
It's been a pleasure having you here as well. Be kind to yourselves, folks. Remember to forgive. Understand what you're dealing with is something that is only for now, and you can move past it. Make the best of the life that you have, because it moves quickly. And if you don't pay it close attention, as Ferris Bueller said, you're going to miss a lot. So thank you very much for tuning in and spending your nights here with us. And I hope we enlighten you and educate you and entertain you just enough to keep you coming back next week. We'll see you again right here on the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Darkness Radio.